I'm talking to Jessica Velasquez, who is running for the House.
District 22. It's a wonderful district. It's the East Mountains outside of Albuquerque, including Tijeras, Cedar Crest, Sandia Park, Edgewood, and then around the mountain to Placidus as well, and Algodones.
And so that makes an interesting district, an interesting mixture. And it's kind of an interesting race because you ran for this seat before and you were defeated, but there's no incumbent this time because the incumbent has moved on to another race. So it's an open seat. So it's sort of an interesting situation. And I can imagine that you were eager to run again.
I was. We came so close, Susan, back in 2018 when I ran for the very first time, and we came within 141 votes of winning a district that has never been held by a Democrat. So I was absolutely eager to come back again in 2020 and finish the job. We're running a lot smarter and stronger than ever before. And, you know, the first time around, you know, as a small business owner myself and a former public school teacher, we did a lot of hard work. And now we're able to work a lot smarter and, you know, reach out to more voters. And I really am proud of the people involved in this campaign. We've got over 130 folks signed up to volunteer. And that is the lifeblood of our effort here. That's what this campaign has always been about, is deep connection to the community and civic engagement. So here's hoping that it'll come to fruition here in 2020.
For listeners out there who might be thinking about running at some point, what do you mean by working smarter? Does it mean using volunteers better or organizing better? Or what does it mean? Or does it mean getting started earlier?
All of the above, really. Like any other initiative, there's a learning curve. And I had some incredible help and training along the way that has made me a much better candidate. And in terms of running an organization, because ultimately at the end of the day, political campaign really reminds me a lot of running a business. You know, we have different folks doing different job functions and keeping all the horses pulling in the same direction, if you will, is definitely something that we've gotten a lot better at and a lot more effective at. And for me personally as a candidate, investing the time upfront, consistently, regularly, to talk with voters directly has been just my absolute focus and primary top priority in 2020.
Of course, it's a different campaign this time because of COVID. But
Susan, I don't know whose bright idea it was to run for office during a global health crisis, but here I am. And it's a new world. You know, we're not able to gather for big events. We're not able to knock on doors. And so we've relied a lot on these personal phone calls, you know, the candidate calling voters directly in the district, and a lot of text messaging, a lot of digital media, you know, mail will absolutely play a role because, you know, we'll do whatever it takes to have important conversations with the people of District 22.
Well, let's talk about what made you decide to run. What made you decide to make the step of wanting to go into office?
Sure, a couple of things. Like I said, my husband and I are small business owners. We have a family business that has been in business since 1976. So with my background in that public sector, married to experience I had as a public school teacher as well for over a decade, these two primary kind of driving forces in my life, which was, if I could boil it down to a bumper sticker, Susan, it would be new opportunities for New Mexico. And I see that happening very much in our economy and in the realms of public education and also in healthcare. And so for me, creating new opportunities for more New Mexicans really needs to happen in various sectors across, you know, our public life here. And I'd love to see the kind of state that, you know, our children can grow up healthy and strong. We've got safe communities. We've got great infrastructure. We've got state-of-the-art schools. And we have an economy where, you know, our children, when they grow up, can step into new and exciting opportunities that will allow them to stay here in New Mexico and continue to contribute.
Are you suggesting that those opportunities are being developed, or are you suggesting that that's what you want to work on if you get to the legislature?
Absolutely both. New Mexico, I think, has been at a turning point for you know, the past few years, and I see that, you know, we've got folks coming into our state who really want to, you know, set up shop here. We also see a lot of homegrown entrepreneurship, which excites me as a local business owner myself. So I would love to see that continue. And when we're heading into a legislative session in 2021 that is going to be an intense session, you know, a special session gathered back in June to address revenue shortfalls in the state budget that resulted from the COVID-19 downturn and, of course, a drop in oil and gas prices. And despite federal relief, lawmakers still had to trim the budget by, I think it was $580 million. So heading into the 2021 session, it could be a lot like digging in the couch cushions for loose change. And in that particular situation, my hope is that as a legislator, we can bring my background in the economic sector to really look at what we need to do to kickstart our economy and get money circulating again. You know, we can't cut our way to prosperity here. And the budgets are always a reflection of our values, and the things that we prioritize show us who we really are as a state. And so if you've got a minute here, Susan, I'm up on my soapbox here, but if we've got a minute, I would love to talk a little bit about some budget priorities that in my mind are top of my list.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I think first and foremost, we've got to put money in the hands of New Mexicans because we'll spend it locally. And we can do that in a couple of different ways. I think that if we increase and expand tax credits and rebates for New Mexican families, that will help a lot. We also had really good news this past week. I'm sure you heard that our health insurance costs are going to decrease this year, which is going to be a relief for a lot of New Mexican families. So open enrollment, pay attention for the news from open enrollment. That'll be able to cut costs for New Mexico's families as well. Second, we have to keep making sure that our New Mexican families can have their basic needs met. So here we come around to health care, right? We need basic health coverage. We need to make sure that access to health care isn't dependent on where you live in the state. We want to expand access to high-quality, affordable health care. Look at creating a basic health plan or a buy-in plan, Medicaid buy-in plan even, that's available to all residents. We want to make sure that we have food security. This is not the time to cut SNAP benefits. And I think that, you know, restoring unemployment insurance cuts made to dependents of laid-off workers will help. And we certainly don't want to reinstate a food tax right now. So we've got to keep the basic needs covered here. Of course, we want to utilize all federal COVID relief funding that comes in and keep pushing for increased federal relief for our state and local governments, and also create some flexibility in spending those funds, and, you know, so that we can keep using those federal funds in ways that maximize relief for all of the New Mexicans who need it most right now. To that point, I have to interject a plug for completing the census as well. So New Mexico is extremely dependent on federal funds that stem directly from the census count. So listeners, if you have not yet completed your census, please do so as soon as you possibly can. In terms of other priorities in the budget, we've got to keep funding education. That is, for me, as a former public school teacher, one of the absolute top priorities here in the state. PED saw a smaller budget cut during special session than a lot of other state agencies, and so that is that is good, but we're still going to have to address shortfalls in that particular area as well and use reserve funds as we need to fill in those budget shortfalls so that we don't see program cuts that will hurt our children or our families here in New Mexico.
And that's been an issue in the past of whether to use reserve funds or to keep them in reserve and whether we're actually in a rainy day.
Right. It might be raining now. I think it's safe to say that it's raining and hoarding money away for some fictitious future purpose at this point when we have desperate need now seems a little backward in thinking. So absolutely look at expanding the use of those reserve funds to fill in where we need to.
To talk a little bit more about your background, did you teach before you came to New Mexico, or did you teach in New Mexico when you were a teacher?
Absolutely. I taught here in New Mexico, and I actually did a stint overseas as well. I taught at a sea turtle research project in Costa Rica and was the curriculum developer and language instructor there, English language instructor there, but I spent over a decade in Albuquerque Public Schools and at UNM. And so, yeah, it was the honor and the privilege of a lifetime to work in the public schools. And I did leave the classroom first time around to run for office and also to work more full-time at our family business because it just required me. And so now I'm not in the classroom at the moment, and I'm back working full-time at our family shop.
Oh, I see. You left teaching because you just had to get involved in the business, not because you were tired of being a teacher.
Oh, absolutely. Yep, to get involved in the business and also to, you know, shift my attention to another sphere of public service, which was running for office. 2018 was my first race. And so started looking very seriously at it in 2016.
Okay.
And so all of the, you know, the perfect coincidence of events, you know, I left public school to come back to the family business. And within that same year, it became more and more apparent that my path was going to lead me into the public sector and serving in, hopefully, in the legislature.
Let's talk a little bit about your family because you have children, but they can take care of themselves more or less, right?
Sure. We've got one in college, one eighth grader and one sixth grader. They're pretty resilient and they're pretty, you know, pretty self-contained. They love to read, so that makes it easy for them. And, you know, the really interesting thing to me, Susan, with kids and with daughters specifically, too, this campaign started around the kitchen table with a group of women in the East Mountains thinking, well, what else can we do? And someone in the group piped up and said, someone's got to run for office. And everybody looked at me. And so all of our children have been kind of growing up with mothers who are active and engaged in the political world and with a mom who's running for office. And for them, that's completely normal. And, you know, our kids are paying attention. And I think that for me personally in my family life, the fact that, you know, my children are almost nonplussed in some ways. They're just like, oh, yeah, mom's going to go make phone calls or mom has an interview or, you know, mom's going up to the roundhouse. That was all very normal for them in a way that it wasn't when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds good. I wondered if you had talked to any of the leadership about what you might want to get involved in, what committees you might be on or anything like that.
You know, we haven't actually had that conversation. I am very interested, of course, in the Education Committee. I'm really interested in rural infrastructure issues, though, due to the nature of our particular district. I would also really like to work, I think also in, well, wherever I'm going to be most of service, actually, if I got to be honest here, you know, I'd love to bring my background in small business to bear. We've worked a lot with different state organizations from my state level, you know, from my own business here, like Manufacturing Extension Partnership and Department of Workforce Solutions and all these wonderful resources that are available to business community here in New Mexico, too. And that would be really, wonderfully fascinating as well.
Oh, well, that's quite a range.
Yeah, I mean, it's my background is pretty diverse. I would be interested in working on, you know, specifically economic growth and development as well. So we'll just see where they put me.
And I should say for listeners who've just tuned in, I'm talking to Jessica Velasquez, and we're talking about her run for the New Mexico House. It seems as though you think of yourself as a rural. You know, there's kind of a dichotomy between the urban and the rural and sometimes the South and the North legislators. And it sounds like you think of yourself mostly as that you would be a rural legislator representing rural interests.
You know, and District 22 is interesting that way. I would call it rural and ex-urban because we're such an, you know, this community is not a suburb by any stretch. But we do have majority of folks who are working commute into the city to work. And so we've got kind of a bit of both because where Albuquerque goes, obviously, it definitely has an impact in the 14 corridor in the East Mountains and in Placidas as well and Algodones. But we are certainly no suburb. And, you know, East Mountains has its own distinct personality that has much more in common with rural districts across our state. So I think that that requires, you know, a special kind of sensitivity and responsiveness in a representative, and that's what I hope to bring to this role as well.
So you may make contact and sort of join in efforts with some of the other legislators who are representing rural areas once
Absolutely.
You get up there.
Absolutely, and especially when you look at, specifically a water-fragile area like the East Mountains, that we have a lot more in common with I think, in terms of water resources with other more rural districts who aren't necessarily tapped into the water authority. And same thing with, you know, economic challenges here. I would really be interested in building those relationships and seeing what we can do, you know, across district lines even.
Well, some of the other things that I've been asking all the candidates that I talk to are about reproductive choice and where you stand on that. And I know that you've listed that in your website, but just let listeners know.
Sure, absolutely. I trust women to make personal choices about their health care with their doctors and their families without government interference. And that is something I will absolutely stand up for, is women's health care, and no politician should come between a woman and her doctor.
Okay, and you've been endorsed by Emily's List and Planned Parenthood, I think it is.
Yes.
Okay, and then what about paid leave, paid family leave?
You mean should we have it or should we have more
yes.
of it? I hope that's what you're asking, Susan. Absolutely. Yeah, I absolutely support initiatives to give both men and women in family roles an opportunity to spend that precious time with their children. You know, I was lucky enough to have it because as a school teacher and then as a university employee and also since we run our own business. But that should be, you know, that was certainly lucky for me to be able to enjoy that time and for my husband to be able to have flexible time to spend it with us. I think that is absolutely something we need to expand so that, you know, more families can have time off.
Do you have employees in your business, so you have to think about those issues?
We do. So we're a classic small business, so we have 4 employees.
Oh, okay.
In addition to my husband and myself. And we, you know, because we are a small organization and we operate very much with lean manufacturing principles in mind, we're able to flex time when our people need it. You know, we have to put people first. And one of the things I'm really proud of with our business is that our head plater, we run an electroplating company, so it's precious metals electroplating, and our head plater has been with us for over 40 years. And I think that is very much indicative of the kind of business we run and the way we take care of our employees, you know, because if you don't take care of people, you've got nothing. You know, people first, then profits.
And I guess I should ask you about your position on guns, since that's such an important issue for your opponent.
Sure, and I think that this is where you'll see some real differentiation. My opponent is pretty extreme in her positionalities. Now, having said that, we live in the East Mountains. Pretty much every Democrat I know, myself included, owns a gun. So I guess you could call me a Second Amendment Democrat, but I also think that we need to create safe communities and that we do not need to keep dumping fuel on a fire when it comes to keeping our kids safe, when it comes to keeping our communities safe. I understand completely that my neighbor, you know, who is a responsible gun owner, and myself and my husband, are not part of the problem. But I also think we have to hold people accountable, and that with, you know, with great privilege comes great responsibility as well. You know, my son's favorite movie growing up was Spider-Man, and that echoes when we have conversations around guns. You know, yes, it's a right. If, you know, a Second Amendment right, people want to talk about that. But often we forget that with our rights come responsibilities.
And what sort of responsibility do you mean? What responsibility to what?
Oh, to public safety in general. You know, and I think that if you're a gun owner, it's not too much to ask that you're locking up your weapons. You know, I don't think it's too much to ask. And I think people who've gone through gun courses like I have as well, you know what safe protocols are. Most folks I talk to out here in the East Mountains are not opposed to closing loopholes that allow guns to fall into the wrong hands. You know, and that is something I think when you have conversations with voters in districts like mine, they want to know that their right to go hunt and to own a firearm is protected. They're also equally invested, and this surprised me, you know, and I have folks supporting this campaign who, you know, were lifelong NRA members. And I was really surprised because I think the rhetoric around guns has become so charged that people feel like you're trying to make them small, bad, and wrong, Susan, around this issue. And when I have conversations with voters who are gun owners here in the district, I'm actually really surprised at how much we agree on and how much people are willing to actually come to the table and have conversations around what could be perceived as a hot-button issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'll never forget having a conversation with a voter on the door. He had NRA stickers in his windows. And conventional wisdom would dictate that as a Democrat, he's not going to want to hear anything I have to say. And we had one of the best, it was one of the best conversations I ever had as a political candidate. And it was based on mutual respect, and I was willing to hear him out. And he was actually willing to meet me halfway and talk about where we could tighten up our rules and our laws around gun ownership. And that just absolutely transformed the way I looked at this issue, because I think sometimes we're scared to have those hard conversations, and people want to take really hard lines on it, and they think you're attacking them or vice versa. And the more I talked to voters in real life, and we got away from, I guess, kind of the more polarizing and heated rhetoric, and we're able to say, okay, well, what solutions do you see? You know, do we see that there is a problem here? Oh, yeah, there's a problem here. You know, and to actually hear their take on the situation was just staggering. And, you know, sometimes even changing language around it made a huge difference. Because at the end of the day, even, you know, the more people who identify directly as, you know, I'm a Second Amendment voter, they also don't want a woman to die at the hands of her abusive partner. And they can see that there is merit in protecting folks from gun violence. So that, for me, was just incredibly hopeful to learn that as I was talking to constituents in our district.
And that was going to be another question of mine. What kind of reaction are you getting from voters this time, as you call them mostly? Are people excited about the election? Are they ready for it? Are they thinking about it? Or what are you finding?
I think so. You know, I feel at this point like my phone has kind of fused to my jawline here. Mm-hmm. I spend so many hours a day on the telephone. And, you know, I had a great conversation 2 days ago with a Republican gentleman because I absolutely believe that we ought to be talking to as many voters as possible in our area. If that's what you want to do and represent your people, then you better find out what's on their minds. And the gentleman happened to be a Republican, and he tells me, yes, I've been following you. I know who you are. I've never voted for a Democrat in my life, and you sound like a nice lady. And I said, well, sir, I'm not asking you to marry me. I'm just asking you to check out my website and consider it. You might not ever vote for a Democrat. You and I might not ever see eye to eye on every single issue, but I absolutely believe you'll see I'm a highly qualified candidate who will do a good job for the people of our community. And he said, I'll check out your website. And I said, that's all I'm asking. And so folks are excited. And, you know, again, in this district, you know, one of the things that I found has been the biggest gift of this district is that folks are absolutely willing to talk to me, you know, even if their voter registration card doesn't match my own. And that has been really exciting. Folks are excited for the election. And, you know, I've had some of the best conversations with independent voters and Republicans and Democrats all across the board. You know, I'm looking forward to just phenomenal voter turnout this year in District 22, and we'll see where the chips fall when all is said and done here.
Well, thank you for sharing all your thoughts and what you're finding out there. It's interesting to hear.
Sure, and this election is so crucial. It's an opportunity to secure a seat that has never in the history of the state been held by a Democrat. We, you know, fell short, for listeners who are just tuning in, we fell short in 2018 by just 141 votes. So 2020 is the year to finish the job, and our website is Velasquez4NM.com. So it's my last name, Jessica Velasquez, the number 4NM.com. I love the show, and I'm so thrilled to be here today.
Oh, thanks.